Arigato, Mr. Roboto, Domo. 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 Arigato, Mr. Roboto, Domo. 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 Arigato, Mr. Roboto, Domo. Arigato, Mr. Roboto, Domo. Arigato, Mr. Roboto, Domo. Arigato, Mr. Roboto. Thank you very much, Mr. Roboto. Unusable.
Search is now unusable.
Google search is now unusable because it only shows you AI pictures. And this means
is this
you
from
cannot.
Reddit?
What?
Is this from Reddit or Hacker News?
No, that's me. I'm trying to search. I'm trying to search for poses and I'm trying to use Google search and it's unusable now because it only shows you like Tensor Art, Civit AI. Tosakarin, Stable Diffusion. And it's
yeah,
like
I was.
This...
I thought you were asking me to look up something for prep. I'm sorry, I misunderstood you.
Oh, well, it only took AI a few months to render Google image search completely unusable.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So you want to talk about that, or did you have like anything in
anything you want to talk about is fine with me.
Okay, let's do that. We could just start. I'll do the intro. I'll do the intro later.
Just
I'm not sure
tell me before what you want to talk about.
Well, what was that? You were having an interesting conversation in the in one of the group chats about mathematical optimization problems.
Oh, it was about the fact that people are using tools, treating tools as gods instead of just tools, and.
So what does that mean? Like using tools as gods? Aren't tools good to use? I mean, I like using tools.
Yeah, but at the same time, tool is a tool. Tool is designed to think for you to think with, and comes with ups and downs. But it's still a tool. You need to use it. And AI is a tool. However, some people think that AI is a god. That it's going to solve all problems and allow everybody to do everything that they ever wanted to. And, well, it's not going to end well because AI is just a set of additions and multiplications connected to a training database. And it just remixes what it already knows. So if you want to use it, for example, if you're drawing, if you want to use it for reference to like, create a difficult pose and see how it might look so that you can help your own drawing, then it's fine. But if you just generate art from it, then it looks uncanny because it's just twisted things from the database. And it's never going to be as good as a very good artist is, because that's literally how AI works. I remember there was this machine that they made to kind of recognize when you want to plant oaks. You have what are these oak seeds? You know, what
acorns.
Are they called?
Acorns. Yeah.
Acorns. You have acorns that are already dead inside, and acorns that are not. And you can tell by cutting off a small part of it that won't kill the acorn and seeing inside what's inside. And if people who are skilled in it can tell the acorn, whether acorn is good for seeding or it's trash, 82% of the times. Hmm. And so they made, took the acorns that were recognized as good ones, and they use them to train the AI, the AI model, you know. And it turned out that this very simple problem was solved very well by the AI. But the highest possible amount of true positives that AI achieved was 78%.
So less than the guess and check method of physically... taking a biopsy of the acorn and seeing inside.
No, the exact same method, but performed by a human, a trained human. It's slightly worse. It's slightly worse than a human. And that's pretty much what you would expect, since AI works by you feeding it data that was already processed by a human.
Yeah, and I think this is where the non-software engineer or like the normie person that gets excited about AI doesn't really understand what exactly they're getting. They're not getting a thinking machine. What they're getting is very, very complex pattern recognition systems. And that pattern recognition system is really only as good or as reliable or as useful as the training data that it's being fed on. So if you ask, for example, going back to art, because that's what a lot of people use this AI for, if you ask AI to generate a picture of a pretty girl sitting, you know, in a chair or something, there are many thousands and thousands of headshots of pretty girls in the world, right? Millions, maybe. Maybe billions of pictures of pretty girls in that pretty much the exact same pose. So AI is very good at generating beautiful women sitting down with just their head and shoulders, right? However, if you ask the AI to generate a very complex or unusual pose or even a novel pose, right, that hasn't really been captured in art before, the AI is not really capable of doing that because it hasn't seen it before. And it's not capable of imagining something in the way that a human artist could imagine something that doesn't exist.
Because what it does is it simply goes to the database that is vectorized and checks which vector can I pull from this database so that it's compliant with the prompt and at least like 85% compliant with the other database, the check database. That's used to verify whether the created thing is correct. That's how AI works. So what I wanted to say in the beginning is that AI is good for making your work better. Like if you, for example, are creating a 3D map for a video game, obviously, a lot of this is going to be just completely random patch of land. And maybe you can like delegate most of it to the AI, you know, just create me this plane and make it interesting. However, it's going to lack human touch. It's going to feel empty, like this open world, procedurally generated worlds in video games. Meanwhile, the worlds that I remember best from games like Morrowind or Gothic 2, they were entirely handcrafted by somebody who just wanted to make it look cool, who just wanted to have this stone pillar made from rock. Behind it would be a tight ledge, and you could like get over it and find a burned house with like a treasure inside. That's cool. That's stuff that people like. And AI is not really capable of nuance like this, but I think it's well suited to create like this plane where you just put trees and pretend that it's just a forest and make it decently interesting so that nobody would say, hey, this is just a flat map. They don't really like put varying terrain on it. So I guess AI is good for that, but still it cannot be relied to create work on its own. It's just a tool to make your work better, to like make your work faster in a way. However, if you start treating it as somebody you can just delegate work to, then you are going to get a product with not sufficient quality, and the lack of human touch is going to feel artificial. Maybe you can start the talk already.
Yeah, I mean, we're starting just in medias res here, so we're just going on. I'm not gonna like do an intro or whatever. I'll just start it whenever the starting gets good. So a lot of people have said that the early stuff like ChatGPT 3 and 4 that it was really good at like making text that looks good at a glance, right? That makes things that look like an email, that look like a story, that looks like a legal brief, but when you dig in, you find all kinds of inaccuracies, all kinds of strange, random mistakes or errors or just non sequiturs in the text. And I think that's applicable to your 3D geometry problem. AI is really good at creating like templates or work that doesn't really require good amounts of
human input.
Yeah, it's really good at like producing work where individual details do not matter very much. Like if you're making a video game map, it doesn't really matter if the terrain at any particular spot is above or below sea level, right? It doesn't really matter whether a mountain is here or there. So long as there are mountains and so long as there is water and so long as the terrain moves around enough to keep things interesting, individual details don't really matter. And so if you have an AI create a video game map in the engine, it'll work great. And then usually what you can do is you can have a human go through, and if he sees like a random lake somewhere that doesn't make any sense, or he sees mountains popping up that are not appropriate for whatever they're trying to do, then he can go around and fix it. But it's definitely not the kind of, it's not this kind of like all-encompassing tool that I think some people think it is or want it to be, where they just can delegate huge sections of their work, their life, their personality to. What do you make of the phenomenon that was fairly short-lived, this panic about people falling in love with AI chatbots? Do you think that that's still something that's going on, or do you think that was kind of just like a momentary alarmism?
Well, I think it's a thing, but it stems a little bit from people being misinformed about AI. The very term artificial intelligence is very misleading. It's just a machine learning produced classifier, a neural network. It's just a set of multiplications and additions. And that's it. There is no intelligence in it. There is no consciousness. I think people being misled by that, they kind of want to treat AI as a human being. We do have tendency to humanize a lot of things. Like, look at these Chinese cats that eat food from these feeders on camera on these Chinese streams. They are all getting names, human names, or like names that you would give to a human, like Mr. Fatty, Mr. Smelly, something like that. And they are just animals. Yeah. And we humanize much more than animals. We humanize cars, plants, even tools that we use. And but I think it wouldn't really be enough for people to like start falling in love with AI en masse and start using AI to combat their loneliness, if there was no loneliness, which right now is an epidemic. We live alone, and most people have very little social contact, even the normies, the people that do not spend most of their time in the internet. They now too, well, maybe saying that they do not spend most of their day in the internet is no longer applicable, because even person that is social and that is not like deep into internet culture is right now spending a lot of time in the internet and a lot less time with other people. And since this epidemic of loneliness is getting worse and worse, I imagine that there is going to be a lot more people who will try to substitute loneliness with things like AI. We remember this case of like this Japanese man from early 2000s who got this chatbot, not non-AI chatbot, hologram girl, and he married her legally in Japan. I mean, it was a sign of what's to come, and people were already doing stuff like this back then, and with AI being way more convincing than a simple chatbot, I imagine this is going to be happening a lot more.
Yeah. I think it's a little bit overstated, personally. I think that there's kind of two tendencies among the ruling technological elite when it comes to this stuff. On the one hand, I think that they personally are very excited about it, and I think that some of the less technical among them, and even some of the technical ones, have been kind of dazzled by the possibilities or theoretical possibilities of AI. And so they have been really excited about its mass adoption, not only in the technical world, but also in the business and social spheres. But I also think at the same time, they are somewhat afraid or jealous of the idea that normal, regular people will have access to the very real benefits of some of these AI tools. And they want to restrict or control the extent to which ordinary people are able to utilize them. And so I see a lot of scaremongering and fearmongering. Obviously, there's a lot of people who just want to keep AI tools out of the hands of people who will make them say naughty words, politically incorrect opinions, or, you know, generate pictures of women with large boobas, which, you know, it seems like a funny thing to spend one's time trying to restrict or control. But I mean, that's how these people operate. I'm much more of the opinion that AI is ultimately a toy. It's a technology that is, I don't see it as being like a very influential technology long term. It's something interesting. I think it's like clockwork stuff. You know what I mean? Like, there's maybe a couple of applications for it here and there, but ultimately it's a fad. It's a novelty. It's something that's fun, but it doesn't really do much, like from a productive industrial side of things. I don't know how you feel about it, but
I feel like it's a tool that's going to be used more and more, and it's going to be used pretty efficiently. However, I do not think that is going to like replace artists. It's not going to replace code engineers, at least not the ones that solve problems and not just write code. I think it's going to have more influence than you say, but not to the point of what we are warned or promised. You know, the stuff that is going to take over production of everything, and we're just going to live in the AI world. Ultimately, I think that the reason the technocrats really push AI as this new thing that's going to solve all problems is that, like I said, AI is just a classifier that mixes and matches whatever it has in the database.
And if you control what's in the database, then you control the
output. Then you control what the AI says. And they're going to use that. They're going to put all the correct political opinions in the training database. And then they will say, oh, AI said that we need to combat global warming. You know what that means? It means that this is objectively correct because AI is science, and science always right. It's pretty much global warming again, you know? There is a book in Polish called Pharaon by Stefan Żeromski, and it tells a story of Ramses, I think 11th or 12th, who wants to make grand changes in Egypt, but he is too consumed by his own petty lust and stuff like that to really take the power struggle seriously. And the priesthood class that is really holding all power is outmaneuvering him from the back. And when the final attack on the temple comes, the priesthood kind of manipulates the generals that are about to like condemn it, to like launch it, to where they shift the day over and over until it lands on the particular day. And when the attack begins, the priesthood goes out in front of the temple, raises their hands, and the sun sets during the day.
Yeah.
Because they are educated people, they calculated that the sun is going to be in eclipse on this very day. But the soldiers don't know, and they run scared because they think that they angered the gods. And ultimately, the power struggle is won by the priesthood class. And I think it's the same thing with global warming. They knew that the temperature is going to start decreasing or increasing a little bit because it's cosmological, it's cyclical, you know. And they were aware of this because they made research on the ice that never melts on the North and Southern Pole. And they checked how thick the layers are. And they deduced the temperature oscillations over the centuries, and now they are just using this knowledge.
They can manipulate the masses by scaremongering and appeals to authority. And because they're the authority, they can always decide, you know, what the answer is
going to
be.
Yeah, and they are going to use AI in pretty much the same method. They push this notion that AI is the new god. And now the new god is going to say all the right things that they need. However, as for the practical uses of AI, I think it's going to be split half-half. Like I said, it's not going to replace anybody because, like I said, it's only as good as... It can only get as good as a human that's very decent in his job. It can near human excellency in simple problems, but it can never reach it because it's taught from human data. So it's never going to like overcome humans. It does not have sentience because it's not really an intelligence, so it cannot solve problems. And so I doubt it's going to like replace artists. I doubt it's going to replace engineers, people who solve problems. It's going to replace people that draw corporate art because it's not art. It's just these ugly stick men that are very soulless. It's going to replace Indians that code useless stuff, like useless classes over and over again. It's going to replace people like that whose work is not really that necessary. However, people like that were being replaced by code generation tools before. And these have been in development for like 40 years now.
Right. So, or even just frankly by templates, like things like Substack, right? Like,
yeah.
Like having commonly used code, having standards, having templates, that greatly reduces the number of kind of like low level prototyping type jobs, right? Or grunt work jobs or QC jobs, even if everyone's working off the same standard.
And but I can say just to finish this thought and go to the next one, I'm going to say that despite the fact that it's going to be widely used, I think, and it's going to obviously add more complexity because everybody will want to use it, and this means that real engineers will now have to not only learn all the stack used for the project, they are also going to have to learn even more stuff around the AI used next to the stack. So it's just going to create more work for engineers, and that's what I'm afraid of as well, because I am a software engineer myself. And but I don't think it's going to be like used to its full potential. Like I said, the elites are pushing the notion that it's a new god, a new problem solver. Nobody's really treating it as tool, and it's already falling into all the traps that the creators of the methods, because we knew the methods to like handle AI for almost, well, not really a century, but more than five decades now. So yeah, I think that we are falling into all these traps, and I think we because of this paradigm that it's a new god and not a tool, we will not use it effectively. It's going to end up like the ancient Greeks and the steam engine. Ancient Greeks, they knew steam engine, they discovered it, they knew the principle, they just thought that it doesn't really have any valuable uses. They just thought that it's a toy. They made it like a spin this metal toy around. Also there was a Turkish guy that discovered steam engine in like 16th century and use it to spin kebab around, so he doesn't have to do it manually. You can have the knowledge, you can discover a tool, but if you do not have enough imagination and enough will to apply it in a correct way, then it's just going to be a toy. It's not going to live up to its full usefulness. And in the future generations, I think they will look back at us and look back at us in pretty much the same way as we look at the ancient Greeks and their steam engines. And we can already see stuff that AI is falling for. But maybe you can ask about that later, because I was talking for a while now.
No. I mean, it's good. I mean, I pretty much agree with all that. I mean, maybe I don't know really what the extent of the use cases are, because most of my experience with it has been on the consumer side, right? Like I'm the end user, like playing with basically like open source LLMs or image generation models, played a little bit around with. I mean, look, there's only so many things that you can make the soldier from TF2 or characters from Tuhu or you know, the Thomas the Tank Engine show. Like, there's only so many funny lines you can make them say before it just kind of gets old. And there's only so many large-breasted anime girls that you can generate before you start to wonder what the actual, you know, net benefit of this tool is going to be for the economy. I think maybe on the software development side, maybe there are tools that can be useful. I'm just very skeptical of, like, in my work, people are talking about using it to, like, parse emails or, you know, like, assistant communication or prototyping of, like, spec documents and things like that.
Yeah, and then somebody will have to read the document or the email.
Yeah, the problem is, like, as soon as you apply AI to any kind of, like, person-to-person information transfer, what you're eventually going to end up with is a system where you're having an AI read the emails into your inbox and provide you a summary, and then you give the AI a summary of what you want to reply, and the AI crafts an email and sends it out. If everyone in the office is doing that, eventually what you end up with is a system where the AI is just reading and writing and replying and reading and summarizing and replying to emails back and forth to itself. No one is actually reading any of it, and the AI will generate infinite text, right?
And it will lose details from every single step.
Every time it will lose detail and nuance until it just becomes unusual. And you know how I know
just talking about the weather.
You know what I you know how I know this is true is because that's exactly what happened on a lower tech scale with email. Email used to be a less formal means of communication if you wanted to instantaneously communicate. It used to be that the scale of formal communication went in-person communication, not formal at all, a telephone call, maybe formal, maybe not, and a written memo on paper, an inter-office memo or a piece of mail, a document that was actually physically delivered to someone's desk. You go watch movies from the 70s or 80s about like someone working in a big office building, and you'll see some young 20-year-old guy with a big cart wandering around the office dumping mail on people's cubicles. That's how your memos and emails used to be delivered, physical pieces of paper. And when email started to come out and it became a thing at the corporate level, this was a way to instantaneously send a message to your office mates that was not formal. It didn't have to be formal. It was treated like an instant messenger. And over time, what happened is emails became more and more widespread. People started to send more of them. They became more standardized and formalized until now. When you send an email, they're generally used as a means of summarizing high-level information or scheduling meetings. Right? They're kind of dense pieces of information that you have to read through, like you would a formal document almost. And if you want to just talk to somebody and ask a quick question, you don't use email. You use Slack or you use Microsoft Teams or Messenger or whatever. Whatever instant messaging app your company has. And increasingly, those are becoming formalized too. It's very strange how these communication technologies become, there's like a sclerosis or that affects communications mediums where they start to like congest the more and more people use them.
Nothing new under the sun.
Say that again.
Nothing new under the sun. Yeah. And there will be no remembrance of the things that were.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, in your office, you guys use Slack or Teams or?
Well, we are all working in the same place. So we just talk.
Okay. Yeah. See, that's the best system.
We do have Teams, but we don't really use them for anything.
Yeah. Like I know that a lot of people are against the return to office thing, and I certainly am for most people. But it is true that in certain applications, there really is nothing better than being able to like reach over to your desk mate and tap him on the shoulder and go, "Hey, can you come look at this? I need your help with this," or be able to walk down the hall to your boss's office and go, "Hey, can I pull you over here? I need to ask you something, or I need to have you schedule something for us."
Until the two technicians have belching contests and you're trying to focus. However, we are contest? Belching contest.
A burping contest? That's hilarious.
Well, it's really not. Anyway, returning to the topic at hand, I think that thing that you said about the emails just being read by AI, written by AI, and at some point they just start to lose all details until AI is just trading marbles created out of words which have no edges, no meaning behind them. And nobody knows, because nobody reads what they say and what could they say. So you need to put somebody over it to watch over whatever is created, is what's going to happen in the software. You'll just have AI create you a lump of code that then you will have to spend pretty much as much time as you would spend writing it, just reading it, making sure that it won't like set the chip on fire or make the website that you're writing steal somebody's data. And we are already seeing the thing that you've said about the AI feeding of AI creating this infinite loop of like going straight to the mediocrity, you know, the gray mass of nothing, is yeah. One of the dangers that we were warned about. It's called poisoning the training database. So the AI is constantly like being retrained to have even more data, and this data is coming from the internet. This is why there was outrage of the artists, because most of it was just acquired without asking anybody, pretty much stolen. And this is why there was a lot of outrage about this. However, this method of like taking whatever without asking is now came to shoot them in the foot, because there is so much shit, so much AI shit. Just try Googling like anything. Especially if it's like anime. Try Googling like an anime girl standing in a park in Google Graphics and see for yourself how many of these are AI. And that wasn't the case just a few months ago. Just a few months ago, there was no AI whatsoever. Now, most of these pictures sometimes are AI. And whoever is scraping the internet for the training databases, he doesn't know that. I bet it's like some office in India that does it. So AI is already being trained.
Feeding its own excrement, and it's just you're like every successive and really it's gonna come down to like the first models, right? The first training databases are gonna be the best because they're the ones that are gonna contain the least poisoning by other AI generated content, right?
Yeah, pretty much. So, you are recreating the email situation, except with emails, you know, the important detail that you need to put in 12 more backdoors in your application for CIA is going to be lost by the AI, because first it's going to exchange 12 for many, and then it's going to exchange backdoor for a vulnerability, and then it's just going to exchange many vulnerabilities for some problems and completely lose the sense. And then it's somebody who will read the world blob that at the very end will not even realize you have to do something. And by accident, your company will create a very safe application and your boss is going to have a very unpleasant meeting with some glowy in a very dark suit. Like the same thing is going to happen to the pictures right now. You know, it has this training database, but it's creating multi fingers. And how many multi fingers are there already? AI doesn't know that a human needs to have 5 fingers.
And it's only 5 fingers.
Yeah, it's these vectors. And if close your hand and turn it slightly to the side, how many lines do you see? You see 8. Now open your hand and put it like perpendicularly to your eyes. I mean, orthogonally to your eyes. Now you see 10 lines because there's 5 fingers, 2 lines each. And you know, you can shift your fingers around, change the number of these lines. AI does not understand that there needs to be 5 fingers. It says, I need to have lines there. How many? Well, let's just take some vector from the database. Oh, here it's 6. I'll try 6. Well, the verification database says it's okay because it has some pictures that there are 6 there. So it just does that. And then you just end up with like a huge giga finger and 3 smaller ones. And the number is correct. There is 6 lines, 6 vectors. Everything's good. However, now imagine how many of these multi-finger pictures are there already. And now every single model that's going to be scraped from the internet will be fed these multi-fingers, and the sense of what constitutes a hand is going to be lost forever. You know, it's just going to be just like these emails. They are rushing, speeding fast with every iteration, speeding fast towards a meaningless blob of words that contains absolutely no valuable data at all. It's the same is going to happen to the art. It's going to like be the end result is going to be this like a blobby looking female with uncanny looking eyes. The shading is going to be pretty much non-existent, because right now AI doesn't understand shading. It's you know, the concept of 3D light in a 2D picture does not exist for him, because it's not sentient. So it's just, you know, colors. If enough faces have bright forehead, then it's going to have a bright forehead. At the same time, it's going to like make the underside of the knee bright as well, because it took a vector from the database and the vector had a bright knee. So it just, you know, pasted that and everything's good. And at some point, it's going to like completely forget how to do the shading. It's just going to be to have this flat colored or uncanny colored pictures to derive from, and it's going to just create even more uncanny looking derived scuffed lightning pictures with melty fingers. So yeah, this is one of the dangers that I was warned about during my studies, because I had a subject on AI. You know, never do this. Never feed AI what it creates, because it's just going to regress. And the other thing that you want to avoid is to have a verification database and training database contain things that are too similar, because then it can just specialize in creating this exact picture.
And nothing else, right?
Yeah, and not if you have like only pictures, if you want to create something that recognizes road signs, and you only lose picture, you only use pictures that have road signs on and the background is this green tree, then at some point it will learn that it always needs to have a green tree behind it. And if you encounter a road sign in the middle of a desert, then the neural network will not recognize it. So people know this, and I bet that when they were first creating their recognition databases, they remembered about it. But now when they will use AI for it, and AI will just create, you know, this road sign with as blobby and unrecognizable background as possible, because the important thing is the road sign, then the future generations will just learn that a road sign is only a road sign with a blobby background. And when it's going to encounter a road sign behind a very detailed green tree, it's not going to recognize it. That's other danger. Not only poisoning training database, but verification database as well. And that can make them too similar. And in this case, the AI can overly specialize in recognizing something that it shouldn't, or generating something that it shouldn't.
Yeah, because the first temptation that AI engineers and developers are going to have is that once these tools become a part of their normal tool set, is to delegate the part that most needs human verification and human wisdom to select, right? They're going to delegate that back to the AI, right? Oh, we have to develop this application to detect road signs, and so we need to put together a training database for that. Well, instead of spending the $500,000 that it would cost or whatever to hire someone to sort through images and find good training data for road signs, what we're going to do is we're just going to ask AI to generate a bunch of random pictures of road signs, because, hey, GPT already knows, you know, Stable Diffusion already knows what a road sign looks like. So we'll use it to create the training data. And you've already started to see that. And by taking that shortcut, you're going to result in some very iffy code. I think that it's interesting that throughout this discussion, both of us have kind of been working on the assumption, and I think it's a true assumption, that the source of truth for all of these systems has to be ultimately like a human being. Like a human being has to be the source of truth for something. Like if you want a large learning model to detect road signs, you have to start from a human being with a camera taking a picture of a road sign and another human being taking that picture and labeling it in a training and verification database with tags that says, this is a road sign. This is a stop sign. I think a lot of people are waiting or hoping or anticipating the day when the AI will be the source of truth, as we said, to like inform human beings as to what the truth is. But I don't think that can ever really be the case. Like the AI is constantly facing a context problem, that it requires a human being to create context for everything that it generates, every prompt that it reads, every output that it puts out, and every input that it receives as part of a training database, right? Like a human being has to classify and categorize and tell the AI what it is. The AI can find things or generate things or make guesses at things that will match what it has previously seen, but there's not any technology that I'm aware of where an AI program can see something new for the first time and give it a category. And it certainly is not capable of seeing what it has seen in the past and creating like a new category or recategorizing or refining its own outputs. And as we said, when an AI is fed its own outputs and retrained on them, generally speaking, the quality goes down. Whereas in science fiction, the idea has kind of been for a long time that like the way AI will get better and smarter is by like feeding an infinite loop of AI back into itself, right? Because this is how a human being learns, right? A human being receives input from its senses and from other people, and it takes those experiences and it contextualizes them into positive or negative experiences or whatever. And it's constantly seeking to like recontextualize the world around it. Now, the brain does operate on what's called experience expectancy, where like the brain is set up to expect certain things based on its very early development period. This is why people that have had very traumatic childhood have very different and in some cases very negative personalities, because they are working with a brain pattern that is very different from people who that have not had those experiences. But the idea is that a human being throughout his or her life is capable and hopefully does choose to learn from their experiences, recontextualize them, grow and change based on what they have experienced. And so a human being is kind of like a learning machine, right? It is capable of taking new things, integrating them with old things, and creating something new. But an AI does not have that capability, does not have the ability to recontextualize things. It doesn't even really have the ability to contextualize its own output as good or bad, better or worse. It requires a human being, in fact, to tell it that, which is why, you know, when you are interacting with a chatbot or with GPT and it says something that's false and you go to correct it, the AI will sometimes pretend like, or seem to pretend, right, like it didn't make the mistake, or it will say, oh, I'm sorry, actually what I meant to say is something else. Like the AI doesn't have any concept of objective truth or right and wrong. It is a guessing machine. You have to imagine it like an extremely lazy and like unmotivated person that is literally just following rote directions, and he doesn't care whether the directions make sense. He doesn't care whether the output is right or wrong objectively. He's just going to a bunch of drawers, tossing random numbers in an air, and as long as they match the verification database and match the prompt, then it's good to go. It doesn't matter if it's complete garbage. So I just, one of the problems is that people really, really want a system or a technology that lets them not have to be accountable for the end product. That's kind of what the search for technology has been for a long time, is like, how do we find some way that means that I don't have to turn my brain on at work? And I just don't think that AI is going to give that to you. If anything, as you said, Seba, the more AI you use, the more conscious you have to be about the quality of everything that you see. If AI has touched it, there's a large percentage chance that something really stupid has gone into it, and that it will need to be corrected. And unlike a document that a person creates from scratch, you know, when you create a document or write a piece of code from scratch, you can look at it at a glance and just review it by eye and see, oh, hey, I made a typo here or I made a mistake there. And I know the rest of this code is good. When you're QCing something, you can't do that. You actually have to review every single detail of it in order to make sure that there's not an error, because you yourself haven't actually generated any of it. And that, in some ways, for me, makes quality control a lot harder than it would for me to just generate something myself and then check through it and make sure that I got it right.
Yeah, we can start finishing and look back towards the beginning. How you can use AI. Well, you can use AI as a tool. You can use it as a tool to make your work better. I remember there was this discussion at really the beginning of the previous century, the 20th century. Back then, the artists, sketch artists mostly, got by drawing stuff for the newspapers and the magazines, especially fashion magazines, clothing, stuff like that. It needed to be portrayed accurately, favorably, so that women would want to buy it. And it needed to be drawn well, and that's what the artists did. However, then a camera was made and introduced, and suddenly the magazines were just printing photos. And every single artist out there was doomsaying that the art is dead, nobody will ever draw anymore, nobody will ever use pen and pencil to create pictures, because now you can just take pictures of anything you want. And there was a lot of books written at the time about learning how to draw. And the people who were writing them, these books, they wanted to like address the issue, I guess, for the new people.
Right, because you're not going to sell any books on learning how to write if everyone's convinced that it's a dead art form. And you might as well join the bullwhip manufacturers and the chimney cleaners union. You know, it's for technologies that don't exist anymore.
Yeah, pretty much. And what they said is pretty applicable for every single tool out there. They said, you know, it's surely going to take away some market, because why draw a piece of clothing if you can just photograph it on a sexy looking model? And this is going to make women buy it even more, because women always want to wear what the pretty girl is wearing. But this doesn't mean that the art will die. It just means that it will shift a little bit. And today we see that it's true, because artists are drawing commissions, fan arts, comics, cartoons, stuff like that. They're not drawing pictures for newspapers anymore or magazines. And the other thing they said is that you don't have to like fear the camera. Like, you don't have to say, oh, the camera is the devil that's going to ruin my hobby forever. It's going to ruin my work. I'm going to go hungry now. You can use it for what you're doing. You can just, and you know, take a picture and use it as a reference. You don't have to like sit your female friend there in this piece of clothing and wear it for 2 hours while you're trying to get the contours right. You can just take the picture and use it as a reference and use it to draw. And they said you can use it as a tool, or you can just copy from it. Use it correctly and incorrectly. If you use it correctly, then you will just take the picture and use it as you would use a real person sitting in front of you. You know, just take the measurements using your own eyes, using your own hands, you know, and draw stuff as you see, you know, with all the angles that you can measure, with all the distances that you can measure with your hands, with your eyes. Or you can use it incorrectly. You can just put it on the piece of paper and draw from it. And if you do that, it's going to end blobby, because of a lot of reasons. It's going to end blobby. It's not going to end up looking good. Some people do it. And they claim, you know, it's the future of drawing, because you can just, you know, take a piece of paper and redraw the picture on it one-to-one. It's not going to look good, but hey, here it is. And this reminded me of AI very much, because nowadays, every single artist is incorporating pictures into their work. they're drawing from reference. Like, if you ever got a commission from an artist, what you do is you send him a pose that you want. You send a picture, either a picture somebody else drew or a real life picture that somebody took of a girl or a guy standing in a way that you want the character to be standing in. So 100 years after this discussion, everything went the exact way these people said that it will. This tool just got incorporated into normal artistic process of the sketch artists. They are using cameras to their day-to-day work as references. And I think the AI is going to follow a similar path. You can be a doomsayer saying that, oh no, it's going to kill off all the work and my hobby. It's not. It's like going to maybe, you know, there are some guys that like have disgusting fetishes, furries, for example, and they really want to see porn of it, and they spend money to have it drawn, and now they won't have to. But it's not going to like replace this guy who draws these comics that are well known, like Ball Body. If you ever went on YouTube and seen any cartoon memes or like voiced comics memes, you know who Ball Body is. Art was always about interaction with the artist. So people at some point, people just want this guy to draw what they want to see. They don't want anybody else because they want to interact with the artist, and they want this exact art style. And wherever this is applicable, wherever this is important, this interaction, artist is not going to get replaced. It's going to be replaced in this low level, like you said, this low level thing where quality control doesn't matter. It's just for this furry to have another porn picture to his collection. Yeah. Yeah. That it's going to replace artists, but that's not really significant work. It may earn people some money, but it's not like it's going to kill the real deal. It's not like it's going to kill the real commissions that people do. And like I said, it's just going to get incorporating into the creation process and everything, just like in art. An artist, I guess, 20 years from now or even 10 years from now, if he wants to draw a pose that he doesn't know how to do, or draw clothing and he doesn't know how to make them look good, how to make drapery look natural on that picture, he's just going to have AI generated, take a gander, see how he can do it, and use that to draw his picture.
Yeah, it's the same thing for writing too. Like AI, people have talked about like AI eventually like writing whole novels or writing scripts for movies. And there are some things that AI can do. It's good for generating like rough outlines of stuff or templates of stories if you have no idea what you want to write about. But really, I find that it's very marginal. One of the best things that AI can do is generate like a template for you, which you can fill in along the way. And I think that it may get sophisticated enough to replace some kind of like lower tier artists. But mostly what I find people are using it for is for things that are comedic, things that are funny, that are not too serious, where, again, the quality doesn't matter too much. And where a human being can take like a creative idea and have the AI basically prototype something out, like those early AI pictures of like, what if Metal Gear Solid was an 80s action movie, or, you know, whatever, like those kind of memes, or the AI voices, you know, doing, you know, funny US presidents getting into shenanigans, those sort of things. So AI is really good for comedy and for memes, definitely. And if you are a writer, or you're trying to, you know, to generate a story, it can be helpful in some cases to help you prototype. I think that it's going to be super helpful for things like advanced spell check and for like making your sentences and paragraphs flow better. There are already a lot of tools for that, and they use AI components. But I'm really not concerned about like large language models ever replacing the novelist or the short story writer. And the real reason is because in the same way that people are interested in making art and interested in interacting with artists because of who the artist is, right? That interaction. People like to read things like fine literature is a result of the arts, the artist's own experiences being translated into their work. And I said this in a voice message or a podcast somewhere else before, but it's, you know, the best writers that I've ever read and the ones that are the most timeless, the ones that are going to be remembered, are really spectacular, were really spectacular and interesting people in their own right. I mean, people like J.R.R. Tolkien, right? Or Robert E. Howard, who wrote the Conan series, Burroughs, Edgar Rice Burroughs, who wrote The Princess of Mars, H.P. Lovecraft. I mean, H.P. Lovecraft is a perfect example. Like, H.P. Lovecraft is actually and unironically a character from a Lovecraft story. He's like a paranoid schizophrenic. He's terrified of leaving his house. He has these weird ideas, you know, that his racism is based entirely on his like fear of the unknown. He sees like monsters and aliens and shadows and demons behind every corner. And so when he writes his books, he is able to impress his very strange and interesting personality onto his writing. And you're just not going to be able to get that with an AI. In fact, you're not going to be able to get that with a person trying to write a Lovecraft-inspired story. That's why all these people that write these like Lovecraftian horrors, it doesn't come across the same way. It's not right. Because to write a truly Lovecraftian story, you have to be like a weird Spurg who's terrified of Italian people. You know what I mean? To write like a really amazing adventure story, you have to be basically kind of a cowboy who has lived on the American West and, you know, gotten into gunfights and fistfights and tried your hand at a dozen different things and tried and failed and tried again. You know, that's Robert E. Howard. That's Edgar Rice Burroughs. That's E.E. Doc Smith. You know, if you want to write a really amazing, you know, military science fiction series, then you'd better darn well be somebody like Robert A. Heinlein or John Stiegley or Joe Haldeman, who all three of them, they each wrote basically the same sort of story about, you know, science fiction soldiers in space and power armor fighting against a race of bugs. All three of them were in the military, but all three of whom not only served at different points in history and in very different units, they also experienced three very different wars. And so their experiences and their sort of message about what it means to fight in a war and, you know, whether war is good or bad, or, you know, their subjective thoughts and philosophies about these things are all very different. And they give the books a different tone and a different message, even though they're still writing about the same subject matter. And then you can even have a civilian like Orson Scott Card, writing, again, very much the same kind of story with Ender's Game, who gives his own very unique and interesting take on the same topic. And I don't think, you know, again, in all of these things, an AI is not going to be able to deliver that, because somebody that is reading and appreciating these things, that wants to engage with these ideas, they really want to engage with the writer. They want to have that writer's own life experience, their own wisdom, their own ideas, their own philosophy, their own message shared through that medium. And you're not going to get that from tossing random numbers in the air. All this to say, the essential component of a really good story or a really good piece of art or a really good video game or a really good piece of code is not any individual piece of it. It's not something that can be mathematically broken down into vectors and put into a training database and generated at semi-random. It's the spirit of the thing, and that spirit has to come from a place of ultimate truth, and that ultimate truth has to originate from a human being. And yeah, that sounds like metaphysical nonsense, but it's true. And I hate to be like a kind of like a dualist here, but I don't think that it is possible to mathematically calculate all of the essential components of a great piece of work, artistic or industrial. I think that there is an essentially creative aspect to every one of these things, and that without a human being there to lend that creative aspect, you're going to run into problems. At some point, you have to have a human being who has turned his brain on and is going to dedicate some critical thought to creating something. whether that's a bridge or a computer program or a masterpiece of art. And so if you can try and you can give that man tools, you can create systems that will help him, that will reduce the grunt work. But at some point, there has to be an interaction between his brain, his creative spirit, and the material that he's working on. You can't ever eliminate that necessity.
I think that's well said. And I can add what I saw on the internet a few days ago. One guy said that he did not believe in the existence of soul until the AI came, the widespread AI generation came, because now he can see what art without soul looks like.
Yeah,